The title of this talk is Smart Meters, Should We All Just Opt Out? And the reason for that title is that Detroit Edison, DTE, has just come out with a new opt-out proposal for people who object to having a radio transmitting smart meter on their house. And we're going to go into some detail on that proposal, what's good or bad about it, and whether it's a good idea to sign up for that plan. But before we get to that, there's the outline of the talk tonight. We have a few subjects to cover because I want to make sure everyone understands just what is the nature of the harm the smart meters cause and why they should not want one on their home. So first I'm doing the overview, and in the overview we'll be talking about what the utilities say are the reasons why they need this system. And then we'll go into illnesses that are caused by radio frequencies. Then we will be talking about what is informally called dirty electricity, and engineers would call it power quality. It's a preferred term in engineering language. And the privacy issue and why that's important. I have some handouts about that on the back table near the door where you came in.
Yes.
We'll talk about DTE's new opt-out plan. What can we do? And then hopefully, we will talk about the McMillan bill, whether he makes it here or not. But hopefully, he will be joining us. Okay, this is what a smart meter looks like. How many of you already have a smart meter on your home?
I have a model.
Okay, it looks like about two-thirds of you already have one. This is what they look like. They differ from the traditional electric meter. The traditional meter has a little clock dial to go around and a big wheel that slowly turns. This is a smart meter manufactured by the Itron company, and this is the particular kind that DTE is installing in southeastern Michigan. It has an electronic digital display that flashes different numbers in sequence. Some folks say that they have trouble reading their own meter because they see a number flash and then a different number, and then a third number flash, and then it repeats. And one of those three numbers is your meter reading, if you can figure out which one. Okay, let's talk about what a smart meter does. By the way, is my voice carrying to the back okay now? Loud enough? Okay. The functions of a smart meter, first of all, it is something that can measure and store or transmit usage information in intervals of an hour or less, enabling the utility to see your usage broken down, in some cases, to the exact time of day. It uses radio waves in the microwave region to do this, the same kind of microwaves in the microwave oven, only, of course, with much lower intensity. Or it may use a hardwired internet connection for real-time transmission of the data to the utility. We don't know of any places in the United States so far where they've taken the hardwired method, but they do it that way in Italy. They're using fiber optic cables to do it in Italy, which eliminates the radio interference, the radio hazard to the health. Okay, the smart meters use two-way communication so that the utility can send signals to the meter as well as receive signals from the meter. Often, a smart meter will have the ability to turn service on or off remotely, as when a bill has not been paid, or time of move in or move out. Some people see that as somewhat of a hazard because you could suddenly lose electric power because you forgot to pay your bill last month, and you might get a little or no warning for that, and you might have medical equipment in the house that would be jeopardized by a sudden loss of power. But that's the system. Smart meter acts as a gateway for communication by the utility to and from individual appliances within the home once the home has installed the next generation of appliances that will contain smart chips. I think that you're going to find that you can't buy an appliance that doesn't have smart chips in it in another generation. So Whirlpool Company, one of our largest appliance manufacturers, has already announced they will make no appliance without a smart chip beginning in 2014. So my question to you is this. Is all this data collection really necessary? I think we have to look at that question because we're being asked to make sacrifices. We're being asked to tolerate a device in our homes that may harm our health, that will surely invade our privacy. So the logical question is why? Why do utilities need all of this? First of all, they'd like to be alerted to outages. After a storm, when my trees bring down lines and wires and so on, their crews have to go through the neighborhoods finding all the down wires and repairing them. Sometimes they leave an area thinking they've got all the power restored, and it turns out that there are local outages that they miss. So they would like to have a computerized system that tells them exactly where the outages are. But we don't need smart meters to accomplish that. All we need is a little radio signal that is transmitted only when there's an outage. Not 24/7, 365, only when there's an outage. That might be one time a year. Okay, we all do through our federal taxes. The reason all this is happening is because soon after Obama took office, he put through his stimulus bill, and there was $3.5 billion in there to motivate all the electric power companies to begin smart meter deployment. And they all rushed to get their piece of that pie, and that's why all this is being rushed so quickly. Why are they controversial? First, because of the invasion of privacy. Our Fourth Amendment rights are being violated. Our Fourth Amendment is one of the most important planks in our Bill of Rights. It is the right to be secure in our homes and our persons, and to be protected against arbitrary invasion of our papers and effects, whether they're in our home or in the on your person when you're stopped on the street. That's Fourth Amendment. Supreme Court still takes that seriously. There was a recent case where the police were able to use infrared detectors to determine that there was an unusual amount of heat emanating from the roof of a house. And they inferred from that perhaps the occupant of the house was at a marijuana garden in his attic. And they used the infrared as their probable cause for breaking into the house, and they did indeed discover a marijuana garden. This case went all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And was, pardon? Oh, thank you. Okay. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court said throughout the case, it said the evidence is invalid. The police did not have probable cause to enter that house, because they were using a surveillance technology to see something which the ordinary person on the street couldn't see. In other words, what they are able to observe as anyone else would observe from the street, they can use that as probable cause. But if they have to use special instrumentation in order to find out what's going on in the house, they've crossed the line already. They needed a warrant before they could use the infrared technology. The second reason where the meters are controversial is health. And there are two kinds of health issues I want to distinguish here. The first one is that we have a certain percentage of the population, variously estimated between 3% and perhaps as high as 10 or even 15%, that are what we call electro-hypersensitive. These are folks who will immediately experience symptoms from smart meters, from Wi-Fi, and other types of devices that use microwave radiation. Now, again, this is a minority. You might well say, well, should the majority be prevented from adopting a new technology that's going to help us save energy to accommodate a small minority of the public? And I think the answer to that should be yes, because, among other things, all of us are at risk in the longer term for cancer and neurological illnesses. We're talking 15, 20 years down the road. I think we're going to see a rash of cancers, neurological illnesses such as Parkinson's disease, dementia, Alzheimer's, and so on, that will spike because of all of the radio frequencies that we've got being exposed to now. So I like to make the canary in the mine argument. In the old days, the coal miners went into the mines, and they always took a canary with them because there's a risk of of asphyxiation or and explosion from methane gases building up in the mine. As long as the canary was doing okay, they felt safe. As soon as the canary started to get sick, they got out of the mine in a hurry. It was a lifesaver. And I would suggest to you that the electrosensitive among us, even though they'd be only a minority, they are kind of like that canary in the mine. If they're having an immediate reaction to this stuff, it's probable that we will all have a reaction given enough time, 15, 20 years. Another problem that's been reported is damage to household appliances. We've had reports of refrigerators burning out, expensive high-end stereo equipment being destroyed. Utilities typically will take no responsibility for that. You know, and even all the damage occurs within 24 hours after they install a smart meter, they'll say that's your problem. Don't look at us. Another problem is making the entire electrical grid vulnerable to hackers and terrorists, just as the internet is today. We know today that even such secure systems as our Defense Department have been penetrated by hackers. Our Defense Department computers, if they can't protect those, they're not going to be able to protect this network of smart meters that they're putting up from hackers. I think it was former CIA Director James Woolsey in an interview with ABC. He said, you know, this is great new technology. He says, if you leave your home in the summertime on a hot day and you get to the office, you realize you forgot to turn off the air conditioner at home, no problem. You can use your smartphone to turn your air conditioner off at home. And Mr. Woolsey said, yeah, that's right. And if you can do that, so can some guy in Shanghai. There's also some risk of house fires. Some have occurred, but I won't dwell on that too much because they'll probably get the kinks out in another year or two. We're not hearing so much about house fires. Okay. Now, I want to talk about the pattern of emissions from the smart meter. Try to visualize here.
I'm going to go on the other microphone temporarily so I can walk over here. This little rectangle in the center, that's your smart meter. And what we're doing here is we're above the house, we're looking straight down on the smart meter. And imagine there's a wall here along this horizontal, that's the outside wall of your house. Okay, this red circle around here, that is marks the intensity of radiation coming off the meter. And the whole purpose of this chart is to show you that it's strongest out the front side. That's up, and that would be away from the house. And if you look at the downside, which is going into the house, you see there's a little gap here where this triangle is. There's no radiation. But as soon as you get a little bit off to one either side, the radiation is almost as strong as it is off the front side. That's what we're trying to show with this diagram. And the blue diagram just shows the vertical emissions from the smart meter, and it's a similar pattern.
Brick and mortar doesn't heat your bag at all.
Pardon?
Brick and mortar,
And the gentleman asked if brick and mortar would reduce the intensity of radiation coming into the house. We're not sure entirely. We think it might reduce it some, but it doesn't block it all. As a matter of fact, the power company is counting on the fact that their signals will go through homes. Because if you think about a neighborhood, what they're doing, they're bouncing the signals from meter to meter. The meter on your house is sending a signal to the meter on your neighbor's house, and his sends to the one beyond. So it's a daisy chain setup. They're counting on the fact that these radio signals will penetrate the homes, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to get a straight line of transmission from meter to meter. Now, I just forgot to announce this at the beginning, but I'm going to suggest that we hold questions to the end, and that's because we do have to be out of here by 8:30. I'm going to try to save a half an hour for questions at the end. But if there's a question that pertains immediately to the slide, is that okay? Go ahead.
Well, if you don't have your neighbor's set meters, are you still going to get the?
Yes, you are. Okay. Okay. Now, some of the traits of a smart grid. Meters communicate with the utility using wireless radio frequency. sometimes abbreviated RFR, which is also microwaves. And the second point is that these are not continuous waves. Like, for instance, with radio broadcasting, and it used to be true of TV broadcasting, I'm not so sure anymore with digital TV broadcasting, but the old style of TV broadcasting and radio waves still, they're continuous waves that are being sent out from the transmitting tower. And those are found to be less harmful than pulsed waves. Pulsed waves mean you get a burst of energy and then nothing for a while and then another burst of energy. Each time you have a burst of energy, the transmission can reach very high intensity peaks. But here's what the utilities do. They'll tell you the energy level is well within FCC standards. The way they arrive at that is by averaging the energy over 30 minutes. So they're averaging these spikes that are very high in energy with all the dead time in between the spikes. This illustrates that. Okay, these red things are the spikes. And what we find is that this was checked, it's thoroughly investigated with Pacific Gas and Electric out in California because they were required to disclose it all to the Public Service Commission. It turns out that about every 8 to 10 seconds there will be a message sent out. And the message in turn will consist of a series of these spikes. These are only milliseconds long. Each spike might be only 50 milliseconds or less in duration. Now, you see the energy of the spikes is high. It's way up there near the peak power density. The vertical axis is the power. The higher up the vertical you are, the more power in the microwave energy. Time lapse on the horizontal. Now, what happens, you take an average of those spikes and you come up with something like this, this little blue line here, this horizontal blue line, that'll be your average power density. That's what the utility will report as being within FCC limits. Okay, 50 millisecond long FCC standards for microwave energy. Now, the FCC only looks at this in terms of the energy that could cause heating of human flesh, and the average is what determines that. But the biological effects on the nervous system are proportional to the peak energy. Okay, why is it falsely claimed to be safe? They say it meets FCC guidelines. It's said to be less exposure than from a cell phone or other common devices. They say it's only transmitting 1% to 2% of the time. Well, the FCC guidelines were based on a 6-foot-tall, 200-pound male in an industrial situation, and they wanted to know what it would take before his skin would start to heat up. That's how they arrived at the FCC standard. And they averaged emissions over 30 minutes. Now, the FCC standards, they don't look at cumulative exposure from all the devices that you would have in a house. They only look at exposure from one device at a time. And that's how they arrive at the standard. But in reality, we're exposed from many devices in our homes, from cell phones, from Wi-Fi, garage door openers, baby monitors. It goes on and on. And it's over time. It's cumulative over time as well. So the FCC standards are protection from single acute exposure, not 24/7 exposure. Now, FCC guidelines provide no protection from the following. No protection from the non-thermal biological effects of those peak pulses. They take no account of pulse signals versus continuous. They don't measure the peak energy level of the pulses, and they don't measure the cumulative exposure from all sources. FCC guideline also has no provision for children, the elderly, pregnant women, or a nighttime recovery period. Now, these are very important. Remember, it was a 6-foot-tall, 200-pound male in an industrial situation was used to set the standard. That's why we say it doesn't apply to children, elderly, pregnant women. The nighttime recovery period is absolutely crucial. It turns out that we humans can take a lot of the blue strain away if our bodies get a respite from it during the sleep hours at night. But there is no respite from the smart meter. It's 24/7/365. WHO stands for the World Health Organization. In 2012, they issued a report classifying the radiation from cell phones and smart meters as a possible carcinogen. The utilities will not tell you about this report. They will cite an earlier one, I think it was 2005, that said the type of radiation from cell phones is not harmful. They don't cite the most recent one, which said it is harmful. And the World Health Organization in 2001 had issued a report classifying extra low frequencies as a possible carcinogen. That could even be power line frequency 60 cycle if it's intense enough. And harmonics of that, multiples of that. Effective pulse microwaves. What does it do? Why is it helpful? Well, it reaches the protective blood-brain barrier. And once that is breached, it allows harmful substances, toxins that are circulating in the bloodstream, to get into the brain. It affects neurotransmitters. It affects testosterone levels. It can decrease sperm production. It can affect the natural rhythm of the brain. It can affect heart rate and heart variability. One of the effects is melatonin reduction. You probably, most of you probably heard of that. Melatonin is important. It's a natural hormone. We all make it. And it's thought to help us get sleep at night. Melatonin levels typically rise during the night and assist us in getting a good night's sleep. It has been shown that prolonged exposure to microwave radiation will reduce melatonin levels. And that in turn can lead to these other things. Cancer, renal impairment, arthritis, chronic fatigue, you name it. Also, prolonged constant exposure to microwaves with no respite during the sleep hours can lead to Alzheimer's, motor neuron problems, Parkinson's disease. They have seen in some studies four times the incidence of Alzheimer's among people who were exposed to higher than normal levels of microwave radiation. One of the experiments I know was concerned with a microwave broadcasting tower in the center of San Francisco. And they did an epidemiological study of the people that lived within, I think it was a half mile radius of that tower, and they found much higher incidence of all these kind of things. Okay, let me walk up there on this one. Okay, what we're trying to show here, I'm sorry it's a little blurry. What we're trying to show with this diagram is that microwave radiation, or cell phone radiation, or smart meter radiation, it tends to penetrate the brains of babies and small children more than it does so with adults. I can't tell you all the reasons for it, and partly it has to do with whether the skull is fully formed, and it has to do with the size and volume of a very young brain, and some other factors that I don't know the details on. And over here on the left, this is the brain of a five-year-old, and over on the right, we have an adult brain. You see with the adult brain, this is looking down on top of the head, and this would be a cell phone down here. So this would be the left side of an adult's head, with a cell phone held right up to the ear. That's the extent of penetration of the microwave energy from that cell phone. As you see, it occupies only a small fraction of the total volume of the brain. Now you go down to a 10-year-old, much larger fraction, and you go to a five-year-old, still larger. That's what that diagram is to show.
That's a separate area. That's dogs.
I don't know about cats and dogs. I don't have any data on that. Okay. These are some links, some web links. If you want to look those of you who are interested in reading the original research that's behind a lot of the things that I've been saying, you can go to our website, michigan.smartmeters.com, or you can go to smartmeters.org, which is the California website. I think it was the first one in the nation. They have a ton of research material linked on that website. And either of these websites will take you to other websites where more things are linked. And there's another thing I will mention. We just had recently had a new website start up with our sister group in Ann Arbor. That one is called smartmetereducationnetwork.com. And they have some good stuff on their site, too. Pardon? Okay, this is the recap for what we've covered so far on the radio frequency. The FCC regulations do not protect against all the effects. Also, low radio frequencies can interfere with cell communication. Resonance exposure is much higher than they emit. RFR is a toxic accumulant. That means the effects build up over time. You have a lifetime tolerance for this kind of thing. I personally know a couple of people who worked in the cell phone industry. One of my fellow speakers, Diana Osterman, who spoke at our Plymouth meeting, she was, for some 20 years, employed in the cell phone industry. She worked for AT&T and Lucent Technologies. She finally had to take early retirement because the electromagnetic radiation was getting to her. It didn't when she started out. This is something that evolved because of the cumulative exposure over the years. Wireless microwave, we say, is not acceptable for the smart grid. Now, I want to talk about another issue here. This is another thing about smart meters that can make you sick. This is not the radio frequency at all. This is a problem that you'll still have even if you've got a non-transmitting meter with the radio turned off. We call it dirty electricity. Engineers call it power quality.
Okay, this green, this big sweeping green line, that represents a smooth waveform, what we call a sinusoidal wave, is the technical term. And your 60 cycle power that travels through your home wiring is supposed to look like that. Okay. But we find, because of a variety of causes in modern electronic appliances, that you're also getting superimposed on that all this red stuff, this spiky red stuff, also traveling through your home wiring. And that stuff can make you sick. The higher the frequency, the more it will tend to propagate. Let's say you're in your home, you're standing near a light switch or a wall plug, or you're standing near any appliance that's plugged into it. You're going to start to get some electromagnetic radiation at relatively low frequencies. These are what we call harmonics of the 60 cycle. It'd be like 120 cycles, 180, 240, 480, and so on. As you go up in frequency, they tend to propagate more at greater distances from the home wiring, so that you don't, even if you're standing a few feet away, you're going to get some.
These are some of the common complaints that people have from dirty electricity. Now, I personally know some people in the Ann Arbor group that have digital meters on their house, or they have smart meters with the radio turned off on their house. So they're not getting the radio frequency. What they are getting is that dirty electricity. And these are some of the symptoms that they experience. And there's been a lot written about this in the literature by doctors and scientists. Cognitive functions are affected. Concentration, memory, and behavior. Sleep disruption, headache, depression, discomfort, irritability, nausea, visual disorders, cardiovascular problems, respiratory problems, nervousness, agitation. All these are related to electrical changes in the brain. They can be caused by the radio frequencies too, but they can also be caused by this dirty electricity. What causes dirty electricity? Well, a device called a switched mode power supply is the primary culprit. In the older days, if you went back 20, 30 years, power supply that you had maybe in a television set would be a big, bulky, heavy thing. It had a transformer and big capacitors in it, and it would produce smooth DC power around the television set. Well, with the advent of modern mass electronics, these things were considered too expensive, too heavy, and too bulky to incorporate in most electronic appliances. And certainly too expensive, too heavy, too bulky to fit into a meter that has to plug into your meter socket. So the utilities have not been willing to provide those kind of high-quality power supplies. Power supply is needed because you have to convert the AC power that's coming into the house, has to be converted into a low-voltage DC, like maybe 12 volts DC, in order to run the electronics and meter. They have to provide that. So they come up with a cheap solution. It's called a switch mode power supply. Many other appliances in the house that you already have also use switch mode power supplies. So this is just layering one more layer of that dirty electricity on top of what you've already got. If you put an oscilloscope on your home wiring now, even if you don't have a smart meter yet, you'll probably see some of that dirty electricity. Smart meter just adds more. Okay, part three, this is the threat to privacy. How do smart meters threaten both our privacy and our freedom to lead our lives as we choose? I had a hand up back there on the table by the door, but there probably weren't enough. Maybe some of you had a chance to pick it up. Why is privacy important? Why am I talking about this? Well, because every once in a while you try to discuss this with somebody, and the type of response you get is, well, I don't care about privacy. I'm not doing anything that I need to hide. What do I care? Who knows what I'm doing? You know, you get this type of response, and I think it's not a well-informed response. People don't know their history. They don't know why we have the Fourth Amendment. Freedom to lead our lives depends on our being able to establish areas of our lives that are not monitored and controlled by others. If our employer can pry into our daily living habits and nature and out that we have to conform to the employer's dictates in order to hold on to our jobs. If an insurance company can pry into our daily living habits, it may turn out that we are denied insurance unless we leave according to its dictates. Imagine getting a letter from your insurance company. We decided to cancel your health insurance because we see you're in the refrigerator too often. If our government can pry into all our daily living habits, it may turn out that every aspect of our personal life can be regulated and controlled. And this is really where you get into the Fourth Amendment issue. Now, well, some people will say, well, but it's not the government that's putting the smart meters on our homes. That's true. It's the utilities. The utilities are doing it at the behest of the government. They are proxies for the government. That's right. Okay, this is phase one of the privacy assault. It's simply the installation of a smart electric, gas, or water meter on your home. All three types of meters reveal information about your private life. The electric smart meter reveals the most, and it is also kind of, I like to call it a gateway drug, because it leads to still further intrusions when you are forced to buy those smart appliances. The data revealed by a smart meter alone, even if you don't have smart appliances yet, the smart meter alone will reveal much information about your daily living habits. When you sleep, when you get up, when you make your meals, when you're away from the house, when just the kids are home or the babysitter's home. A lot of things like that can be discerned from the pattern of activity on the meter. How is it possible to learn all those things from the smart meter stuff? You know, the power companies, they're fond of saying, well, all we do is measure your total electric consumption in the homes. That's all we do. We don't look at individual homes. We just measure the total electric consumption in the house. Well, this is a very deceptive answer, because when you measure the total electric power consumption in the house and you break it down into, say, 5-minute intervals, you can find out when each and every appliance is being turned on or turned off. And from that, you can infer a lot of things about people's habits. How? Well, the things that give you away are the amount of the current draw, if it's a small draw or a big draw, the duration of time that current is drawn, what's called the startup or inrush current, which is different when you turn on an electric motor than it would be if you're turning on an incandescent light. Electric motors take a lot of inrush current until they get up to speed. So the current whether the current is drawn in step with the applied voltage or it lags behind, that's what we call power factor. That's any kind of technical that some of you may know what I'm talking about there. And whether there's a regular pattern of on-off cycles, like if something is cycling on and off every 15 minutes, well, there's a good guess that that's probably a refrigerator or some similar appliance. This is what the raw data from a smart meter looks like. Raw data, except for those labels. So all those words that we added, where it says refrigerator, kettle, toaster, washing machine, we added the labels. Take away those labels, that's exactly what would the output of a smart meter would be. And I should qualify that by saying that's if the smart meter is set to measure in 1 minute intervals. Now, the utilities currently say they're not measuring in such fine intervals. They're only measuring to the nearest hour. You know, they take a reading once an hour. Now, if that's all they're doing, they're not going to get this kind of detail. But that's all they're doing today. We don't know what they're going to do 6 months from now, a year from now. They can change the recording intervals anytime they please by sending a radio signal to the meter. Yes, ma'am?
What about the chips that we've heard about that they're putting in the new appliances in accordance with the EPA? Right, now they're putting them in microwaves and dishwashers.
Yes.
Is that going to work with this meter?
It works. It's designed. This meter is designed to be the gateway to those chips. I think all the appliances, from what we're learning. Energy saver means something else. That's been, energy saver's been on the market for, I don't know, maybe even 10 years now. Means is that it's a more than average efficiency appliance. It has to measure to some standard of efficiency. Pardon? I would think so. They're probably all going to have an FCC license number on all your appliances. Okay. The utility can change that recording interval whenever they please. Utilities now say that electric usage will be recorded only once in an hour. And these readings will be stored in the meter's memory, and they can be transmitted less often. They may take a reading once an hour, but they may only transmit the readings once or twice a day. The smart meters are remotely programmable. The utility can change the recording interval by remote control at any time, with or without notice to the homeowner. Now, you say, well, that graph I showed you a minute ago looks pretty geeky. You really have to be a geek to be able to interpret all those spikes on that graph. But here's what's going to happen. We know already that there are companies in the business of creating and selling software that will take that raw data that's so geeky looking and transform it into a spreadsheet or other type of printout that will be very user-friendly for marketing people, business executives, what have you, or the police. The software already exists. They're already selling this software in California. In California, there's no law prohibiting the utilities from turning over your private information to third-party companies. And third-party companies are just climbing all over themselves, trying to be first to get that data because it has so many commercial applications. Well, who would want the information? Well, insurance companies, employers, marketing companies, and police set it up for most obvious examples. And if the police can get it, they'll be getting it without a warrant. I'm sure they will not be serving a warrant on the utility in order to get it. It'll just be given to them. Privacy assault, the second phase. This is where you get those smart appliances that you were asking about a moment ago. Smart appliances will have the chips in them. As I say, Whirlpool will make no other kind of appliance. And probably the other major appliance manufacturers will follow suit. I wouldn't be surprised if that there is or will be a government regulation requiring all appliance manufacturers to make their appliances smart. The utility programs keep saying, oh, not to worry about this. These are voluntary programs. If you volunteer, then we will communicate with your appliances and then you will be able to save some money on your monthly bill. Well, that's how they sell them. I think one has to be naive to believe that these will indefinitely be voluntary. Soon, okay. Now, the next thing is that there are federal privacy guidelines that were developed by an agency of the federal government. They're not being followed. They're not being followed by the utilities, they're not being followed by the state regulatory commissions. There's a group within the federal government called the National Institute for Standards and Technology. They formed a working group a few years back to study and recommend appropriate standards for protecting people's privacy within a smart grid system. They issued their report in August of 2010. Key recommendations in that report, choice and consent. An organization should clearly, fully, and accurately describe the choices available to individuals and to the extent practicable, obtain explicit approval for the collection and use of their personal information. Consumers should also have the option to forego the data collection and services if they are not related to the core services that are provided by that organization. Now think about it. Is Detroit Edison telling people what smart meters do and giving them a choice because they want to have one in their home? No, of course not. It's all being done surreptitiously. They sneak onto people's properties when they're not home, they slap the meter on the house, and they go to the next house. Is there something, Jenny?
Microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not standing close enough. That's how it's done. So they're not conforming. There's no informed consent here. There's no consent at all, informed or otherwise. They're just doing it. And the state, like the Michigan Public Services Commission, they are not requiring a utility to abide by these federal guidelines. So, they are not requiring them to abide by the federal guidelines. Okay. Recapping the privacy issue, when a utility tells you all they are measuring is your total electric consumption, that is not true, because all of this other information can be extracted from the data. Utilities want to capture the details of your daily life because it's a commodity they can sell. And finally, well, the Federal National Institute of Science and Technology recommendation is not being followed. Okay, where else are the meters being installed? See for yourself. Every industrialized country in the world is currently installing it. There seems to be a mad rush to get it done all at once everywhere. AMI stands for Automated Metering Interface, which is just a fancy way to say smart meter. Now, DTV is offering you an opt-out plan. Here's how it works. If you sign up for their opt-out plan, you will be agreeing to have what they call a non-transmitting meter on your home. It's actually a smart meter with the radio turned off. That's what you'll be getting. And for that, you agree to pay $67 on the front and $9.80 a month indefinitely, or until DTV gets a rate increase next year or the year after. Now, you don't get any relief from the privacy issue. Why? Because the non-transmitting meter is still a smart meter, and it has the memory capacity to record and store all of the detailed electrical usage activity within the home. And then when the monthly meter reader comes around with a handheld device to get your meter reading, they get a lot of data too. The one benefit is you do eliminate the direct radio frequency radiation from your own meter, but not, of course, from your neighbor's meters. And sometimes the radiation from your neighbor's meters is almost as bad as what you're getting from your own. Sometimes the neighbor's meter is closer to your bedroom than your own meter is. You may still get sick or develop long-run health problems from the dirty electricity that this meter is going to put on your home wire. And we talked about that. And when you visit healthcare practitioners, your doctor, your dentist, your chiropractor, they're all going to have smart meters because there's no provision. DTE is not willing to make any provision for any business or professional practice to be able to opt out of smart meters. So if you're one of these electrosensitive people, 10% of the population, and you have to go to the doctor, you're going to be exposed to that. And for some people, it's so bad that they may decide that they can't afford to go to the doctor because they can't be exposed to that, that symptoms are so severe.
Are they going to school too?
I'm sorry?
Are they going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Schools?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Most schools are already not. Now, so what can we do about this? First, this is what we are recommending. You have to decide for yourself, obviously. These are suggestions. What you do, you're going to have to consider all the possible consequences of your action. And we say do not sign up for the opt-out plan. To sign up for the opt-out plan would, in effect, constitute consent for them to put the smart meter on your house. Once you've consented to that, it may not be possible to get it off your house. I would say instead of signing up for the opt-out house, you're going to get a letter from DTE. They're sending them out already. We've seen a number of people receive them that state what the opt-out plan is. And they say, if you want to opt out, you must call us within 30 days. Otherwise, we will assume that you're not opting out and we will install a fully functional smart meter on your house. My suggestion here would be send them, don't ignore that letter. By no means ignore it. And don't respond by phone either. Send them a certified letter that you do not consent to the installation of a smart meter on your home, whether or not it is transmitting radio signals. Then post a sign next to your meter to inform the installer that you do not consent to such an installation. And we also suggest you lock your meter housing if possible. Most meter housings have a little loop where you could put a padlock through. Oftentimes, the electric company's seal will be through that loop. Don't break the seal. If there's a seal there, leave it intact, but put the padlock through there also. Now, installers, it's been pointed out to me they do carry bolt cutters, and sometimes they might cut a padlock off. If that happens, it happens, but at least you've made your statement, and they have committed an act of violence against you and your property. Yes, ma'am.
But in that case, then they put a regular smart meter, then they won't get let in after one, right?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite understand.
If they came over and broke your padlock, then they would install a smart meter.
That's correct.
With a radio frequency.
That's right.
So if you did do that, at least you might have one without a radio
frequency. Right. Now, the lady's question was, if they broke the padlock, they would probably put a fully functional smart meter with the radio transmitter on, and that's true. So her point was that if you were to sign up for the opt-out program, at least you get one with the radio transmitter on. You might still be able to get that smart meter changed to a radio off meter later on. I want to hold questions for now. I see that Mr. McMillan has just arrived. And I want to finish this. Get a little bit of Q&A and then turn over to Tom McMillan. If the meter is already installed, you should write a letter to the utility demanding it be removed. Give them a reasonable period of time, 14 days as suggested, and state in your letter that if they do not remove it in 14 days, you will. I'm working now with three families that have changed their own meter. They simply bought an analog meter on the internet, pulled the smart meter off, and plugged the analog in. Two of the three families have been sued by DTE. So if you follow this course of action, know that there are some risks involved. If you're willing to stand up and fight to protect your life, your privacy, and your health, then do it. Otherwise, not. Now, if you refuse a smart meter and they are unable to install one because you've prevented access to the meter, it's possible that they'll start adding the opt-out fees to your monthly bill. If that happens, we would suggest that you pay them, but pay them under protest. If you don't pay them, you're going to be in arrears on your bill, and they give them every excuse in the world to turn your power off. So pay the opt-out fees if they start appearing on your bill. Let your state legislative representative know how you feel about this issue. If your state rep holds a town hall, this would be a good opportunity to speak out. And now, another good thing you can do, we already got 24 local units of government, mostly city governments, but some townships and plus Macomb County and Oakland County. 24 units of government to pass resolutions saying that people should be able to opt out of smart meters, keep their analog meter, and many of these cities said they should be able to do it without making opt-out fees too. I'm sorry, say.
What will that bill do if you have the meters in your house?
I'll get to that in just a moment. So what we're saying here is it's a good idea to go before your city council, especially if you can get several others who are also residents of that city to go at the same time to the same meeting. If they hear from a half a dozen or more people that are upset about the smart meters, in many cases that city council will be willing to pass a resolution. Now, when we did this a year ago, we asked them to pass resolutions calling upon the Michigan Public Services Commission to address our grievances. It's too late for that now. The Michigan Public Service Commission has made its decision and they're not helping us very much. So now, if people want to go before their city council, they should be asking resolution that could be sent to their state representatives from that city, that area, or resolutions that could be sent to the Attorney General's office. These are the kind of resolutions we need now. And the resolution should support the right of all utility companies to opt out of the smart meter without paying opt-out fees. We think that's a shakedown. You know, first the utility does something that it knows is causing you harm, and then it wants you to pay a fee to avoid the harm. How's that different from old Chicago under Al Capone? We think that a resolution should support the right of opt-out customers to either keep their analog meter or get it back if it's been replaced. And these protections should be extended at least to small businesses and professional practices. Now, the last part of my talk is the McMillan bill. It's House Bill 4315. And we are very fortunate to have someone like Tom McMillan who represents the Rochester area. And he, along with seven co-sponsors, has introduced a bill earlier this year that defends the rights of utility customers not to be forced to accept a harmful meter or to pay a fee to avoid getting it. This is the actual language of the resolution. Now, I've stripped away the preamble language and I've stripped away the definition section that comes at the end. But the main body of the law is what you see on the screen. A utility shall not do any of the following. Shall not make utility service to a residential customer contingent on the installation of an advanced meter, that's a smart meter, or an advanced meter function. It shall not offer or provide a rate discount, meter price discount, rebate, bonus, or other incentive to a residential customer for accepting an advanced meter.
It doesn't say it can't charge a fee.
Pardon?
It does not say it can't charge a fee.
Well, we're getting there. It may not impose any disincentive on a residential customer for not requesting or accepting the installation of advanced meter for use in advanced meter function. There's the answer to your question, sir. That knocks out the fees right there. D, it may not conduct a program to install smart meters in a community if the community has passed a moratorium. If the governing body of that community, governing body of the city, for example, has passed a moratorium against smart meter installations in that city. Right now, DTE ignores all such resolutions. They pay no attention. Sterling Heights passed a moratorium. Other cities have passed them not to install, and they're being installed anyway. So this would at least give the city some teeth to say, you're not doing it in our city. E, install an advanced meter at a residence unless the residential customer expressly requested an advanced meter, or at least 30 days before installation, the utility notified the customer of the utility's intention to install an advanced meter, and the customer did not opt out. Okay, this is Michigan Representative Tom McMillan, representing the Rochester area. He introduced it with seven Republican co-sponsors. Hopefully in time, this will become a bipartisan issue. I know no reason why it should not be a bipartisan issue. People on the left care about privacy too, I would assume. And they certainly care about their health. The bill has been assigned to the House Energy and Technology Committee, which is chaired by State Representative Eric Nesbitt. And what happened last year, what we want is for this committee to take up the bill so that there will be hearings on this bill. And then we want the committee to vote it out, hopefully with a favorable recommendation, so that it will be voted up on the floor of the legislature, the floor of the State House. So far, the committee has set no date when the bill might be considered. A similar bill was introduced by Representative McMillan a year earlier, and it sat in committee all year long. We have a different chairman of the House Energy Committee this year. I would suggest to all of you, write to him, Representative Eric Nesbitt. He's the chairman of the committee. I'm sorry we don't have a handout, I think, with that information, but if you go on our website, MichiganStopSmartMeter.com, you will find a sample letter that you could use, like a form letter or a template for a letter. You can take that as a starting point and tweak it, put in some of your own ideas, send it to him. And it's already addressed to Eric Nesbitt. You'll find it on our website. We now need to make this happen.